And now it's time for us to discuss more of these headlines and simple keywords with Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena. Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday. You know, I made great usage of Happy Dress Day yesterday, and I was expecting something spectacular today. No, please don't go looking.
You've got me curious now, though.
It's a funny thing because we can technically mark an occasion each day. Yeah. Thursday is just insufficient.
Well, every day of the year of the calendar is some sort of day. So, yeah. Oh, here's one. It's National Cereal Day today.
In what part of the world? I'm going to guess the United States. It has to be the United
Maybe.
States.
Maybe. I don't know what the history is behind it, but that's all that came up, I'm afraid. So that's all I have.
So if you're still debating over what to have for breakfast, happy cereal day. Okay, let's get started. As always, we're going to try to cover some of the major headlines for our listeners, starting with President Yoon's. Well, he's standing firm on his decision to expand medical school admissions quota, and he had more to say on medical reform at large. Our first keyword of the day.
Yoon doubles down.
So President Yoon has again vowed to sternly address the collective action taken by trainee doctors. What did he have to say?
Right, so he told a cabinet meeting it is illegal and it's taking people's lives hostage. He mentioned that the absence of residents causing national emergency medical responses shows a clear problem with the current number of doctors and saying that it is lacking. He expressed concern that many doctors haven't returned to work, and he pledged the government would take necessary actions against those neglecting their duties. He also plans to strengthen emergency medical services to reduce the impact on the public. He then added the government's response to such action is not aimed at repressing the doctors' freedoms or rights, but at protecting the people's right to life in line with the Constitution. He also unveiled plans to finalize emergency funds to help stably operate the emergency medical services. The funds are set to be used to inject healthcare workers for essential medical care services to compensate such workers and treat patients. Yoon also touched on the need to reform how hospitals operate, criticizing the reliance on young residents for cheap labor, especially in essential medical areas. He proposed moving towards a system more focused on specialist doctors and making better use of skilled nursing assistants. And Yoon rejected claims that increasing medical school seats would lower education quality. That's one of the kind of criticisms that came out of the medical fields, and that's one of the reasons why doctors have been fiercely protesting against it. Now, he also pointed out that despite significant economic growth, the increase in the number of doctors hasn't kept up with the rise in medical expenses or GDP since health insurance was introduced in 1977. And he compared it with the legal field to say that the number of lawyers has grown accordingly with Korea's economic growth, just not the medical sector. Now, meanwhile, the government is speeding up the process of suspending medical licenses, something that it has been threatening to do against residents who are still not adhering to the back-to-work order of the government. Around 8,000 residents are expected to be targeted for such notifications after government inspections on hospitals found that still a large number of striking doctors have simply not returned.
But because you brought up, I think, a valid point, I think there was also major pushback from the legal community when we changed to law schools, for example. I mean, the entire process of essentially training and allowing legal professions to begin their careers, I mean, that changed in the last few years. I mean, things have settled down, sure, and it has certainly ended up with more lawyers dispersed throughout the country. But there was fierce backlash when those changes were being implemented.
Exactly. So he's made a case of that, basically, saying that it's not really any different when it comes to the medical field as well. But I mean, doctor, it's falling on deaf ears. Doctors are still well opposed to it. So it's going to be a long, drawn out process and battle as things are at the moment.
The road to compromise, Rocky, that might just be an understatement. All right, let's move on to our second keyword of the day.
Nurbom School.
So President Yoon has urged relevant agencies to fully support and promptly address any issues related to the new after-school care program, the Nurbom School. Can you run us through his comments?
Right, so he said it is an irreversible state duty, and he was speaking at a meeting that reviewed progress in the plan to expand this newborn school program, and he pointed out that the critical role of newborn in promoting healthy growth in children, alleviating parents' childcare concerns, and addressing the severe low birth rate issue facing the nation. He also stressed that the program must quickly overcome regional disparities to ensure all children, regardless of where they live, can benefit equally. And he also encouraged parents to trust the government with their children's care and to voice any concerns or suggestions for improvement. Now, teachers were asked to contribute ideas for program development, emphasizing the program should be a collaborative effort. Now, Nudelbaum is currently operating in just over 2,700 elementary schools nationwide, a significant increase from the 459 schools during its pilot phase last semester. However, issues have arisen with teachers being tasked with program duties and administrative work, basically work outside of their normal duties. And that's why there's been some complaints from teachers and teachers' unions calling on the government to fix these issues, basically saying that they're being a bit overworked and that the schools are basically exploiting them to try and not hire new workers dedicated to this after-school program and basically doubling their assignments, basically, and working longer hours, basically.
I mean, we're still in transition, but that certainly doesn't sound sustainable to add on to already the pretty hefty workload of teachers and administrators. So we'll have to wait and see. Now that the president has spoken, maybe it could trickle down to hiring more personnel for the after-school program. That was part of the original plan, right?
Yeah, so overall, there's a lot of confusion around, arising from this, and a lot of schools are not really kind of privy to the kind of guidelines that have been set out. They seem there's a lot of gray areas, apparently. So, yeah, we'll have to see if those problems are rectified.
It's funny because in a news cycle, do we ever get to the end of these stories and say it's been a year or two and now it is successful? I think we report on the issues and problems and then we move on to the next issues and problems.
Exactly. If only, but hopefully it's a rare occasion, but it does happen every now and again.
Okay.
But all these major issues, of course, are never an easy fix to them.
Or a quick fix, right.
Or a quick fix, yeah.
All right, we'll leave it there for now so we can turn our attention to our third keyword of the day.
North's nuke issue.
So South Korea urged North Korea to stop its nuclear program and end military cooperation with Russia. This came at an IAEA meeting in Vienna, of all places. Can you run us through what was discussed?
Right, so South Korea's ambassador to Austria, Han Sang-wook, highlighted the danger North Korea's actions pose to peace both in the Korean Peninsula and worldwide. He also expressed serious concerns over North Korea's Yongbyon reactor operations, as noted by the IAEA Director General Rafael Grossi. Now, he stated that the international community will not tolerate North Korea's nuclear development and will never recognize it as a nuclear state. He also addressed the military partnership between North Korea and Russia, something that both nations have denied, but a lot of evidence and reports suggest that it is happening. And he emphasized the need for both to stop violating UN Security Council resolutions. Now, other countries such as the United States, Japan, and the EU expressed concerns as well over North Korea's nuclear activities. They all called on Pyongyang to adhere to UN resolutions. Many IAEA member countries are also worried about the military ties between Pyongyang and Moscow. Han mentioned that South Korea, the US, and Japan have been regularly discussing North Korea's nuclear issues and other key IAEA members at the ambassador level. Now, prior to this IAEA meeting, South Korea had its first ambassador-level meeting with the EU to boost international efforts against North Korea's nuclear program and also to strengthen international cooperation.
All right, and we move on to our fourth keyword of the day.
Inflation rebound.
So Korea's consumer inflation rebounded in the month of February from a six-month low on higher prices of oil and agricultural products. I've never seen fruits be so expensive. Tell us the details.
Yeah, I went grocery shopping yesterday at a local grocery store expecting I might get some cheaper product than your larger supermarket chains. But I was
to no avail.
To no avail. And still put a big dent in my wallet. But anyway, Statistics Korea data shows consumer prices rose 3.1% last month from a year earlier. This exceeded the market forecasts of 3%. Now, although the inflation rate had dropped to 2.8% in January and has now returned to the 3% range, agricultural product costs surged 20.9% in February on year, lifting overall inflation by 0.8 percentage points. Fresh fruit prices rose 41.2%, the highest since September 1991. Now, the decline in petroleum prices slowed down to 1.5% in February from the previous month's 5% decline amid rising international oil prices. Prices of services gained 2.5%, with prices of public service rising 2% and individual service 3.4%. The cost of dining out also went up by 3.8%, the smallest gain since October 2021. Now, the cost of living index, which reflects the price of frequently purchased items and is closer to kind of the perceived inflation rate, increased by just under 4%. The core inflation rate, which excludes food and energy prices and shows the underlying trend in inflation, remained the same as the previous month at 2.5%. Finance Minister Choi Sang-bok vowed to ensure that inflation stabilizes in the 2% range as soon as possible. Now, analysts suggest that while seasonal factors contribute to the increase in agricultural product prices, the overall inflation trend is moving towards stabilization, with the core inflation rate decreasing. So this may be a temporary kind of bump in what is an overall stabilization trend. I wouldn't say a downward trend as such, but things are expensive, basically. So eating out and cooking at home,
both
a bit of a burden. Yeah, both are being expensive at the moment.
I've simplified my meals. I eat so much of the same salad every day. It's so boring.
Right, all those greens.
All right, I'll leave it there for now so we can move on to our final keyword. The biggest takeaways from Super Tuesday in the lead up to the U.S. presidential election. Our final keyword of the day.
Haley drops out.
So Nikki Haley, the former UN ambassador and the sole contender against Donald Trump in the Republican primary from the U.S. presidential election, has announced her withdrawal from the race. But she didn't say supporters go support Trump. She said, Trump, you owe it to the constituencies to win their votes, convince them of your vote being worthy, I suppose.
Yeah, so she basically made her announcement with a bit of taste in her mouth, I guess. She announced her decision in her hometown of Charleston, South Carolina, expressing gratitude for the support and stating it was time to step aside. Now, she did congratulate Trump in her address, but did not endorse him. She said it was now up to him to win votes of moderate Republicans, the kind of whom Haley was very popular amongst, and independent voters who supported her as well. She, in effect, ceded the 2024 Republican nomination to Donald Trump. This came after losing across the country on Super Tuesday, leaving Trump as the last remaining major Republican candidate. This, of course, sets up a rematch with the current president, Joe Biden, in the November election. So we could see another pretty much a deja vu of the political battle we saw 4 years ago. The sequel, exactly, part two. Now, as the only female candidate in the Republican primary, Haley had been viewed as kind of a central figure against Trump, but struggled to overcome his strong base among the kind of hard right conservatives. Now, her performance at the Super Tuesday primaries was disappointing, to say the least, securing a victory only in Vermont. Haley has criticized both Biden and Trump, focusing on their age, for one, and has positioned herself against Trump from the start. Now, with her exit, Trump's position as the Republican candidate for the presidency is secured early, intensifying the competition against Biden well ahead of November. Now, experts note that Trump's challenge will be to gain support based beyond his base, focusing on moderate Republicans, women, and independents. The outcome of the November election may hinge on his ability to appeal to these voters in key battleground states. Now, Biden praised Haley for her honesty about Trump and reached out to her supporters, suggesting there's a place for them with him, aiming to attract moderate conservatives as well. So, yeah, the battleground for November has pretty much been set as another rematch between Trump and Biden. So, yeah, we'll have to see how that plays out. Still a ways to go, so a lot can happen. But an
eight-month-long process that's going to be brutal and bitter because it does look like both candidates will intend to make the race about their opponent, not about their own policies.
Yeah, exactly.
Biden is 81, says Trump is a threat to democracy. Trump closely following at 77, both pretty old, portrays Biden as this sort of elderly, unfit to rule the country. So it's going to get messier, if you will.
Messy, yeah, exactly. A lot of a lot of unresolved battles and arguments from 4 years ago as well, kind of rekindling. So, yeah.
All right. But for now, we're waiting on President Biden's annual State of the Union address. That might be one of his last chances to address some of the biggest electorates out there. So we'll wait and see. And we'll probably talk about it tomorrow. But we run out of time today. Thank you so much. And happy cereal day.
Happy cereal day to you, too. I'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.